Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. We've got a lot to talk about. The trade deadline has come and gone. The Lakers had a big comeback win last night against the 76ers, and we're all on pins and needles. I see you in the chat. We're waiting for any kind of an update on the injury to Luka Doncic. What are we looking at here once he gets imaging done? I'm Trevor Lane, Jason Tipp, Jovan Buha. Together, collectively, I guess, we are the Lakers Collective. How are you guys doing? Happy to see you here.
It's good to see you guys. This is my fifth trade deadline since I started covering the league. I'm assuming I'm on the low end out of us three because I think you guys have been doing this quite a bit longer. But that was – nothing's ever going to rival the Luka trade in terms of like a singular trade, but that might be the strangest deadline out of the five that I've covered. What about you guys?
Yeah, it was a lot of action. Then it kind of stopped. Like typically you see a flurry of action the last couple hours going into the deadline. And it felt like we got that actually the day before and then the day before that. But I'm glad to be on this side of things. I'm glad we know what the Lakers roster is going to be, at least for the rest of this season. We can analyze this group as it currently is. And no more guessing and wondering what they're potentially going to do. There's, I think, a clear plan or a clear goal for this offseason. And I'm sure we'll be diving into that.
Yeah, we definitely will. What I thought was strange about this year's trade deadline was who the buyers were. You typically don't see the teams at the bottom wind up being kind of the biggest buyers of the deadline, and that's what we got. We got the Wizards buying, a month ago almost, on Trae Young, on Anthony Davis. We saw the Jazz buy on Jaren Jackson Jr. That, I thought, was interesting, that we saw the teams at the bottom go and make these kind of not necessarily win now moves, because I think a lot of these guys aren't going to play much as they work to try to hang on to their draft capital. And the Indiana Pacers, of course, buying on Ivica Zubac, but that's not typical of a trade. Usually you see it's the teams at the top where you go, whoa, this team just got that guy and that's going to put them over the top. We didn't see a lot of that this year. Instead, it was the teams at the bottom setting up for next season. So I thought that was really interesting. But I'll tell you what I think is the most wild thing, and what is going to be, well, fun for us, it's going to be nervous as hell for Indiana Pacers fans that essentially have bet their pick this year, in a year where they've been awful, on a coin flip. Basically a 52-48 chance that they could keep or lose their draft pick in the Ivica Zubac trade. Guys, that is wild, and I can't wait to see what that looks like on draft night.
I think there's a big enough fall off. I haven't done a ton of digging into this year's draft. It's actually one of my goals for the All-Star break. But I think they protected it in a way that's like, yeah, if we're in with the big name guys, we're keeping our pick. But if not, it's okay if we move this forward. And I think the combination of whatever they could potentially get out of that draft and Zubats and getting Halliburton back is exciting. I think one of the things that could be fun is if that pick lands at like 3 or 4, because if it's 1 or 2, they're going to want Derrin Peterson or AJ DeBonson, mm-hmm. I would imagine. But if it's 3 or 4, the Pacers should call up the Pelicans and be like, hey, we want Trey Murphy, you know, and try to do something to add some juice. Cause like, I think there's, on the one hand, they're rebuilding this finals team, but on the other hand, I'd be hesitant to just bank on them being the best team in the East again, when Halliburton is very dependent on his speed. And I want to see how he looks after that Achilles injury.
Yeah, that's going to be key for them. What does Halliburton look like when he comes back? Can they really be off and running that Indiana Pacers club? It's going to be an interesting summer for them. And remember, if they do wind up hanging onto the pick, then it's their 2031 pick, but that'll go away. But I mean, huge swing potentially. You could go from getting AJ DeBonza to add to your team, could be Derrin Peterson to add to the Pacers, and then you're really off and running next year. Or you could get nothing and for this year. You could have a pick later. But man, that's going to be nervous time in Pawnee. All right. The Lakers played last night, a big comeback win. Maxi Kleba, the shocking hero of the day, comes out there and has a phenomenal performance. Austin Reeves goes nuclear with 35 points. Jovan, heck of a game last night. What did you think about the Lakers' big comeback? And, of course, I think that'll lead us into some Luka conversation, too.
I thought this game encapsulated the Lakers' entire season in 48 minutes. You have them come out slowly and lifelessly and just get their ass kicked to start the game. They're, you know, they can't score. They can't defend. They're turning the ball over left and right. They're down in the first quarter. They're down at halftime. But like they're also closer than they should be. Like I thought after both the first and second quarters, I was like, it feels like they should be down like 6 to 8 more points based on just the eye test, like how the game is looking. It felt like Philly was really taking it to them, but they're hanging around. Then they start the third quarter with the disaster stretch, give up a 6-0 run in like a minute, don't get back in transition. And it's starting to look like the game is slipping away. I've conveniently put the Luka stuff to the side for a second. But then they go on this crazy comeback. Starting around the 4-minute mark of the third quarter, they're down 10. And from that point on, they outscore Philly 50-36 over the final 16 minutes of the game. And we've talked about it before several times on the show. Like that late third quarter stretch is always a key stretch for them. And that's when we've seen some of these more, Banshee-led lineups go on these runs that they went on to. From that point on, got it to 2 going into the fourth, then immediately Austin hits a couple threes to open the fourth, and the Lakers never look back. So it was like both. You saw the potential with this group, right? And that 16 minutes was incredible. And the defense, I thought one key thing was they had 2 stocks in the first half, 2 blocks from DeAndre Ayton in the second quarter. Didn't have a stock in the first quarter, 10 stocks in the second half. And like just the defensive activity and engagement from the group, like they're 11th in defense over their past 10 games and also 8th in offense. So like this has been their best stretch in terms of being like top 10-ish on both sides of the ball. But there was also an injury to a key player, like the key player in Luka. So it's like the Lakers just can't have nice things this season up to this point, where even when they have this incredible comeback, their defense plays one of its better stretches recently, they lose Luka in the first half. And now like hamstring injuries, soft tissue, we've seen Denver's been dealing with this with Aaron Gordon continually. Peyton Watson just got injured. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. So it's like, you got to be careful with that. The Lakers have a week going into the All-Star break. I would not be surprised if he misses at least a little bit of time, if not that entire time, just going into the break to make sure they're being cautious with it. But a very Lakers win. Like the entire season was encapsulated to me in that 48 minutes of the highs, the lows. The Lakers won a game improbably that you didn't necessarily expect them. Another clutch win, right? Philly had when Vijay Ejko made that 3, I was like, oh shit, this game's about to flip. Like it's about to go to overtime at least. But yeah, it was like the most Lakers win of the season.
Wasn't it in Philly where Marcus Smart stepped on the line too? Inbounding the ball.
That was against San Antonio. That was the early November
right.
game.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Great memory. All this shit is starting to like.
It is. That's where I'm at too. Especially coming after the trade deadline. It's all just mush at this point. Real quick, somebody, Jack, mentioned here. People in the chat are talking about the buyout market. Can't sign anyone making over $14.1 million. That's incorrect. They can. If a player making more than $14.1 million, the mid-level exception, were to get bought out, the Lakers, because they're below the first apron, they actually can sign someone like that. So not saying anybody in particular, just they in theory could. Jason, your thoughts on a wild night last night that wound up in a very positive Lakers win.
Totally agree with Jovan. It's funny, as I was watching the first half, as the Lakers were just playing so poorly, and the main things were like Austin's minutes were really low in the first half. Austin looked great when he was out there, but he wasn't out there much. And then literally LeBron and Luka were both just awful. Like just legit, both of them just looked like they were drunk out on the court. Like it was legitimately crazy. And so between that and just all the general mistake making, the fact that they were remotely even in the game was amazing to me. But at the same time, as I was watching it, I was like, this Philly team is just not very good. And as I've watched Philly this year, they've been kind of like the Lakers in the East, in the sense that like their record's pretty solid. There's pretty good top end talent, but the roster has no shot to really compete. And where it really shows is against the better teams in the league. As a matter of fact, they're just 5-10 this year against teams that are in the top 10 in point differential. So that just kind of allowed the Lakers to linger. And Embiid was having one of those games where like it was kind of like a throwback to vintage, like top of his powers Embiid, where like it's just a brutal watch. Like it's just grifting and attitude and like nothing powerful to the basket. Just everything's a mid-range jump shot, just like that vintage Embiid kind of style. But what was cool about the second half, everybody ratcheted it up and started playing a lot better. And that's where you started to see, like Jovan said, all these little storylines from the season rise to the surface. Like LeBron having a bad game, but then making several key plays late. That's been kind of a classic LeBron thing this year. Like LeBron has always kept his head in it when he's having a brutal night. And he'll just get like a key defensive rebound, a key step through layup, a key drop off assist to Vando on a cut, something like that. He'll just make like four or five big plays in the fourth quarter that help the team win. And it just is like that's been the value of the LeBron experience this year. There's been this high end, but then on the nights where there's the low end, he almost channels role player LeBron and just makes like four or five big plays and helps the team win. Austin flashing that all NBA upside. That's been one of the big stories of the season too. Just like when Austin's on it, he literally looks like one of the 15 best players in the world. And you saw that again last night. I think one of the things that helped Austin was he was kind of messing around with the basketball too much early. And Philly was bringing a ton of ball pressure, a lot of blitzing, a lot of really aggressive ball pressure. And so when Austin was getting cute with his dribble, he was losing the ball. But as the game progressed, he kind of shifted gears to more just like picking an angle and driving. And he was just toasting dudes off the dribble and getting wherever he wanted to go and started hitting a couple of threes to kind of tie it all together. And he puts up that monster night. I thought both of the threes that Marcus Smart hit in the fourth quarter were massive shots to help kind of like allow to remove some of the pressure from the situation. Here's a crazy stat for you guys. When Marcus Smart does not make a three this year, the Lakers are 4-8. When Marcus Smart hits a three this year, they're 21-8. It's been one of the big differentiators. Classic example of like if they have a guy who's defending and knocking down a shot or two, it just makes a huge difference for the rest of the team. And then Maxey, he's been in and out of the rotation because our center rotation is rock solid. But I feel like generally this year, every time he's been called on, he's been a damn pro. And he's just come out and competed. And one of the things he does that both Ayton and Jackson are kind of bad at is he just plays physical basketball. And like, even on offense, he's smash mouth. That dude has been driving closeouts all year. And it's like every team that's dumb enough to close out on him because he just won't shoot, he just rips right by that guy and goes all the way to the basket and gets a layup. And there's just all these little contributions from all these different spots in the roster. And honestly, it just continues the trend since Christmas Day. This Lakers team, I think they're 12-9 since Christmas Day. Nothing to write home about. But when you consider that they've been with only two of their stars that whole time and the various different issues they've had with their role players and the type of teams they've been playing in this stretch, some of the tougher games on the schedule, I just feel like they've been playing pretty good basketball for the last month and change. And I just think it's all part of this positive momentum towards whatever version of this team is at least capable of upsetting somebody in the playoffs.
Yeah, I thought they really turned things on in the second half. We saw them start to play good. I said it probably 15 times during the first half. Like, they're just playing bad basketball. They were throwing the ball all over the court, making all kinds of mistakes. LeBron James forgot how to dribble. I don't know what the hell that was. Completely.
That Embiid clip, ISO against Embiid.
While that was happening, it wasn't like a fully like real thought in my head, but it was at least a little bit of like, is something medically happening with LeBron right now? Like, he could not dribble a basketball. Is this man okay?
He looked drunk.
Yeah. He could not dribble a basketball. It was crazy. But they turned it on in the second half, got things going. The energy level went way up. The defense, absolutely fantastic. You had Jared Vanderbilt flying around over the place. Maxey, deceptively quick, attacking those closeouts, his ability to get to the rim. I thought he was fantastic. Austin Reeves, once he put his head down and just started driving and going. And I think part of that was Luka going out meant Austin had that switch got flipped, right? And he's, I've got to score. And he just started absolutely lighting up the 76ers, getting to the basket. They couldn't stay in front of him. He was so good getting the ball up on the backboard before the shot blockers could get there. I think he was 7-for-7 at the rim in this game. And the Lakers coming back in a big way. I love the energy of the team, but this speaks, I think, a little bit to a text conversation that we were having. The Lakers looked a lot better when they had their high motor players out there on the floor. And this is yet another game where closing with DeAndre Ayton was clearly not the first option. It was not even the second option, because when it wasn't Maxey, it was Jared Vanderbilt that was playing at the five. Jovan, does this just speak to the growing trend of DA is not the guy to close and maybe just not the guy long-term period, even if he's not a bad value for this roster.
Yeah, two things can be true. I think he has outkicked his coverage in terms of he has lived up to that contract and then some. I think he's been, I mean, recently, maybe not, but over the first 50 games, we're exactly at the 50-game mark, I think he has been a positive value based on the contract he signed. At the same time, I think we can go back and not even go back to like the disaster performances against Detroit and Houston in late December, but even go back to the road trip where you think about he goes out in the Denver game, all of a sudden they go on a big run, right? Or he gets benched in the Clippers game, they go on a big run, gets benched in the Dallas game, they go on the comeback to win the game. It's just, it's been a trend now that it's not only like him not closing, but them looking much better with him off of the floor rather than on it. And it was the same thing last night. Like in the head-to-head minutes with Embiid, he was getting his butt kicked and then all of a sudden Maxey comes in and the Lakers start winning those minutes by a lot. And it's just like, I also think with their, for me, part of this has been the defensive shift from LA to they've been switching more 1-5. They've also been playing more zone. And I think DA is more specifically a drop big. And that's more of his bread and butter defensively. Like he has had the possessions where he'll switch onto a guard and he'll track them well and he'll move his feet. But in general, if we're talking about like a high activity defense, which the Lakers have been more recently, when you're switching all the time and or you're playing some combination of zone, I think there's a motor level and an engagement that you need that he just does not bring consistently or does not even bring consistently within games. Because I thought like he had a couple blocks in the first half, he had a couple nice contests, but then also that opening stretch in the third quarter I thought was a disaster. Like doesn't get back, he is constantly jogging or walking in, you know, transition, and they just need him to be a higher motor, more consistent effort player. And that stands out in stark contrast with Jackson Hayes and Maxey Kleba. And it's almost getting to the point where like some of these games, I don't even think Ayton has like played bad. I just think JJ's lost trust in him. And it's at the point where he's viewing him now as more like a 20 to 24 minute a night starter. And they're going to close with the backup or small ball. Like they're going to go centerless or they're going to go with Jackson or Maxey. And that I just think is the evolution of this team. And it's unfortunate because I still think DA has the highest ceiling of any of those options, right? When he's been at his best, he has been really good, but he just does not reach that ceiling enough. And he certainly does not reach that ceiling against elite opponents. I think that has been a clear trend all season. So I think we'll see what happens with his contract and his player option this summer. But I think that is a clear need for them in addition to a starting 3-and-D wing.
Yeah, high motor players seem to be the key to success right now for the Lakers. When they're putting those guys, you know, LeBron and the Banshees out there on the floor or whatever grouping it is, they tend to do pretty well with that. Jason, any final thoughts on this game before we start talking a bit about this Luka situation and what this can mean?
No, I generally agree with you, Jovan. I think there's probably been some messaging too between JJ and the front office that's like, hey, DA is not our long-term solution. So I'm sure JJ doesn't feel super invested in any sort of like big picture management of the Ayton situation. I'm sure his perspective now is like play him when you want to and don't when you don't. And so JJ just has not felt any sort of hesitation to look in a different direction. It'll be really interesting to see if he does pick up that option and the Lakers also make a move for a center this summer, because if he's not included in it, then he'll be a backup, which would be even a more strange situation. But yeah, overall, like as I was watching them live, there were times where I did not enjoy watching the Lakers earlier this season because they were so disengaged and just playing such bad basketball. And especially when Luka was really struggling the way that he was. Ever since Christmas, I've just found them to be a much more tolerable watch. And it just feels like they're a team that's at least trying to find their ceiling, whatever it is. I think we all agree it's not very high, but they're at least trying. And it's just making this whole process, covering the team, watching the team, a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah. Look, the effort they're playing with is undeniable right now. There are games where they let go of the rope, but then we get games like we saw last night where they really fought back, did what they needed to do. It looked like we were on the way towards disaster at the start of the third. And then we got this big energy burst. And next thing you know, they're off and running. But of course, the aside from the win, Luka, the hamstring issue, Jovan mentioned it. Peyton Watson just got, you know, he's got a hamstring issue. He's now reevaluated in 4 weeks, which means he's going to miss significant time here. Wouldn't shock me if this puts Luka out for the All-Star game as well and this stretch leading up to it. And in that way, I mean, maybe a little bit fortuitous that they do have the All-Star break coming up, because that's, you know, a week plus that Luka, if this is any kind of significant injury, would get to heal. Again, right now, we don't have the news on that situation to know exactly how long he's going to be out for. But Jovan, how do they weather this storm? Is it just go Austin Reeves and Luka, Austin ships passing in the night? Austin comes back, Luka goes out, and you just got to put your head down and keep moving forward.
I think that's part of it. You know, we'll see how long Austin is still on this minutes restriction. He went from 20 minutes against the Nets to 24 minutes last night. So I assume the natural progression would be maybe 26, 28 minutes mm-hmm. next game. And then maybe in the next 2 to 3 games, he's finally off of it. I mean, we saw he had 35 points in 25 minutes. So he can still be a pretty effective and dangerous offensive threat. But I think you would probably have to move him back into the starting lineup and then get into the staggering between Austin and LeBron. This is where I know we're not going to touch on Luke Kennard yet, but a player like that can be more important. JJ talked about it last night, of Luke Kennard being almost an offense unto himself with his movement and coming off screens. And he's a good pocket passer, and like, he just makes quick decisions and has a high level of gravity in addition to being one of the best shooters in the league. So that could be a new component to the offense. Of we have seen them run some more off-ball actions for Luka, for LeBron, some of those wide pin downs. Like, if you're now doing that for even doing it for Gabe Vincent, and like, if you're doing that for Luke Kennard now, it's just a different beast in terms of his off-ball threat. So I think it's going to have to be a joint effort, of course. Looking at the schedule here through the All-Star break, it's versus Golden State, versus OKC, but that's likely without Shea and without J-Dub. Then versus San Antonio, brutal back-to-back, just an absolutely insane back-to-back, and then versus Dallas. So, I mean, they could easily go 2-2 or 3-1 over that stretch, even without Luka. We'll see. Like, I think LeBron has been a little shakier lately overall with the turnovers, and I think not quite being back to the offensive level he was at before the road trip. Like, he was pretty consistently in that like 25 to 32 point range. More recently, it's been like low 20s or high teens. So I wonder if maybe this gets LeBron going a little bit more offensively. He has to be more aggressive. But it's going to have to be a joint effort. Like, and I think they're going to have to win with the defense, right? Lean more into the Banshees. And we've seen them at times when they have like one or two stars really have to lean on the defense. I think that's what they have to do. If, again, assuming Luka misses any time.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to assume that he probably misses at least some. I mean, hamstring, you don't want to mess around with the hamstring injury. Luka looked frustrated while he was walking to the locker room. I'm not anticipating we get news that Luka is totally fine. I hope we do, but I'm not anticipating that we get news that he's totally fine and he's not going to miss any time in this one. I guess this does kind of bleed into the Luke Kennard conversation. So it was Gabe Vincent and a second round pick, the only second round pick the Lakers had to trade in exchange for Luke Kennard. Jason, what do you think about the pickup for the Lakers, adding Kennard to this group?
One quick note on the Luka injury. Yeah. It didn't look to me like I pulled up on my hammy kind of thing, kind of like the Peyton Watson play where like mm-hmm. it's abundantly clear that he took a bad step and pulled his hamstring. I bet you it's more of like a soreness, very low grade strain. Like, my guess is I would be shocked if Luka wasn't playing like the first game after the All-Star break, for example. Yeah. That said, like in the short term, like, there's literally no reason to risk it, because even among all the duos, Austin just complements both guys so much better because they play different positions. I mean, we saw last night just a simple back screen action between the two of them out of a horn set ended up getting them a layup because they're just so difficult to guard because they're guarded by different types of players. And LeBron and Austin in particular just have so many reps over the years playing with each other. So just let those two figure it out until Luka's ready to go. Real quick, I figured it would just be informational, I guess, for all of our listeners. I'll just go over some of the jump shooting stats with Luke, just so you guys have them. According to Synergy, among all of the players, there's 200 of them that have taken at least 150 jump shots this season. He's number one in efficiency. Luke Kennard jump shot is worth 1.5 points per possession. 50% from three, that's number one in the league among all players who've taken at least 50 threes this season. You break it down by play type, he's 42% when contested off the catch, 57% when uncontested off the catch. So if he's open, it's going in almost two-thirds of the time. That's like an insane stat right there. 40% off the dribble. A lot of those are like relocation kind of ideas. By play type, this is where it gets a little more fascinating. 54% in spot-up situations from three, 56% in transition from three, struggled this year on movement shots. So like if he slips out of a screen, like an inverted screen or a guard screen, 1 for 4. If he's coming off of off ball action, he's just 6 for 18 this year. Not a huge shock. He's not the best athlete in the world. And that's where movement shooting kind of requires a little bit more of that. I do think the Lakers will run some plays for him, but like if they run a couple of plays for him and he misses a couple of threes, he just has so much utility as a spot up guy in this particular system. And again, when you look at an offense that's predicated on two man game where Ayton's going to be rolling in the lane and Jackson's going to be rolling in the lane, if you can situate Luke Kennard in the opposite corner and someone like a Rui Hachimura or an Austin Reeves on the opposite wing, or vice versa, it just makes it so it's really difficult to tag that roller. And if you can't tag the roller, that's what really opens up the option for Luka on the lob pass. Honestly, like if it was Kennard and then LeBron started trusting his jump shot again, I would start to feel like this team's heading in a good spot in terms of their jump shooting. Because just look at Austin last night. Wasn't it a breath of fresh air to just see a dude who's like just making shots? You're like, oh, yes, another Laker not named Luka that's just like nailing jump
shots. That's what that looks like.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what that looks like, right? So, like, yeah, I think, you know, you add Kennard to the mix, you add Austin to the mix, Rui's starting to find his rhythm again. If LeBron... It's starting to look like one of those years, guys. It's looking like one of those years where LeBron just doesn't trust his jump shot at all. And that is kind of discouraging. But if they can turn that around, I think there's enough shooting for this. Because like everything about this Lakers team upside has been predicated on the offensive end. If they could become like a legit top 3 to 4 offense in the league. And I think they're capable of doing that if all these dudes start shooting. But I think they need LeBron to start shooting well as well. And I think Luke Kennard's a step in that direction.
I love that he's a ball mover too, not a ball stopper. He's not just the ball gets to him and if there's a closeout, the play dies. He's really good at one dribble, attack the closeout, head up, try to find the open man, move the ball. Sometimes to a fault, JJ talked about a little bit last night that he needs him to shoot more. His attempts, he's just over 3 attempts per game from deep. For the best shooter, literally percentage-wise in the NBA from three, the Lakers are going to need him to increase that volume. But that's also been an issue with him for years. He tends to actually turn down shots. They're going to have him get aggressive there from behind the arc and pull the trigger a little bit more. But you also know that if the right play is to keep the ball moving, he will absolutely make that play. He is very much a ball mover. Yovo, what were your thoughts on the deal itself? Do you like the Lakers giving up a second round pick to turn Gabe Vincent into Luke Kennard?
I struggled with this because
me too.
I'm gonna say my trademark, I guess. Two things can be true. Like, I think it was an upgrade. I just wonder how much it actually moves the needle, because like in a vacuum, I think Luke Kennard is a better player currently than this version of Gabe Vincent. And I think he has an elite skill that could help the Lakers that right now Gabe, like the two skills he was supposed to provide were shooting and defense. And he was incredibly streaky as a shooter and wasn't shooting at the level that the Lakers needed him to. And then defensively, I think due to a combination of age and injuries, I thought he had really slipped this season, even in comparison to last season, the season before. The Lakers on off splits with him defensively were terrible. They were getting lit up anytime Gabe Vincent was out there. People were target hunting him. We've already discussed that. So like Luke Kennard, the gap between them as shooters and the gravity and like the way that defenses will respect and guard Luke Kennard is far different than how they were respecting and guarding Gabe Vincent. At the same time, I felt the Lakers had three needs going into the deadline, and I'm going to list those needs in order. Defense, athleticism, and shooting. Now, I think they're all relatively close, but I still felt like we talked about it a million times on the show. They needed a 3-and-D wing, and instead they went out and got a 6'4" sharpshooter who's a defensive liability. And like that's the other component here is that like Luke Kennard, I feel like is kind of one of these guys that has existed more in theory than in reality. And he is a guy who's progressively phased out of his team's rotations, phased out of the playoff rotation. And I've covered this the last 6 years. He's been like LeBron's favorite late game target to hunt. And like anytime they've played the Clippers or the Grizzlies or whatever team Luke Kennard's been on, if he's closing a game, the offense goes to where's Luke Kennard? We're going duck hunting, bring his guy up, screen, and LeBron's going to attack him in the post or off the dribble. So to me, he's more the ninth man, right? Like, I think there's a clear top seven. I would even put Vando potentially at eight. And you can maybe even argue for Jackson, like Jackson or Vando is like 8 and 9. If you expect him to be like a 10th man, I'm cool with it, I guess. But then there's also the opportunity cost of giving up a second. So that's where I'm kind of split on it, because I was advocating for LA to go for it. I was advocating for LA to trade the first. I was advocating for LA to do something. There was a report earlier in the week from Brian Windhorst that LA was offering the expirings with nothing attached to it. And to me, that was like not operating in good faith, because if you're just saying, hey, here's Gabe Vincent and Maxi Kleba, give us something better, and we're not attaching anything, and we're also not taking back money, it's like, well, why would any team do that? That makes absolutely zero sense. So the fact that they actually put the second on the table, like I do respect that to a degree, but obviously we're talking about a ninth or 10th guy here. I don't even know how much he's going to factor into the playoff rotation. And like, it just doesn't really move the needle that much. So from that perspective, it was like a little disappointing, but like also in a vacuum, I do think he has a real skill that helps. So I'm pretty split on it, right? Like I get the logic, but I also think there's a chance he walks this summer. They wasted the second, and like he didn't really make much of a difference.
Can I add a counterpoint?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just really quick. So let's take Oshae Igbaji as like a counter example, as in like a more of like an athlete in the 3-and-D kind of realm. And his story is interesting because he's having just like an absolutely brutal year shooting the basketball this year, but he made 100 threes last year and shot 40% last year, right? And he's this big physical athlete. And so let's say, for instance, you would have called Brooklyn instead and offered Gabe and a second round pick for Oshae Igbaji. I look at that situation as him as essentially just a different version of that kind of Jake Marcus like kind of avenue where JJ would play that player, looking for more of like a hustle guy that has some utility on offense. Obviously Marcus is more of like, I'm okay at everything on offense, and same goes with Jake, even though neither of them are great at anything on offense. And Oshae would be more of like a transition athlete slash guy, like more like Vando in a lot of ways, right? But I have a feeling a guy like Oshae would have had a really hard time cracking the rotation over some of these other wings that JJ likes to play. What I like about the Kennard move is he is fundamentally different than any other role player on the bench. It's like, we need a dude who can shoot. Here's our option. You know what I mean? Like that to me is the one thing I like about it, is like they haven't fixed any flaws, but they added a specific type of player that the team didn't have, which gives JJ a different punch. And I've heard Pete characterize the team in this way, and I generally agree. Like if we all agree the Lakers are not a contender, but they are a puncher's chance threat to upset people, what does that pathway look like? It looks like different for every team. It looks like, okay, we're playing these guys, this is how we're going to go. We're playing these guys, this is how we're going to go. And like, I like the idea of just having a different card in the deck that wasn't in the deck before the deadline when you're talking about something this small. Now, towards the off season, that's where I 100% agree with Jovan. Like they have to go for these very specific roster needs and swing bigger, because the 10th man's not going to change your fortunes all that much. But within the season, I think he gave JJ some optionality.
Absolutely, 100%. This gives you the ability to play a different style out there on the floor, to put a different skill set out there. And what do you want alongside Luka, alongside LeBron, alongside Austin? Yes, you need defense. Yes, you need athleticism, but you also need shooting and Luke Kennard in the corner when you've got a big rolling. That's going to be a real challenge, I think, for teams to deal with. Again, I like that there's a bit more offensive utility than just being a spot-up shooter as well from Kennard. But people are mad at me right now because they said I'm too negative about it. My concern is this. We've seen this before. They've done this before. Not necessarily. Well, actually, we have. If we go back to like Reggie Bullock, right? If we go back far enough, giving up a second round pick for a guy who's on the last year of his deal, and you essentially buy a half a season from a guy who should be a good shooter. I'm optimistic Kennard is not going to fall off a cliff shooting. If that happens, then we could say there really is some type of a curse with the Lakers jersey or something like that. But we saw it with Mo Bamba, right? You gave up a second round pick to go get Mo Bamba. He played like 13 games. That second round pick evaporates. It's gone. This cannot be a half a season of Luke Kennard that you just bought with a second round pick. This needs to be a situation where he hits, it leads into something. I'm not talking about a big money deal, but it leads into something that goes beyond just this year. Otherwise, does he really move the needle a lot for the Lakers? Is this suddenly the Lakers have a real shot more so than they did yesterday? No, that's not what this does. So if you're going to give up this second round draft capital, which you have none of now, this was your only second round pick because they're that asset poor. This needs to be not just buying a half a season of Luke Kennard. And I think the potential is there for him to hit long term. But I think what's going to be important for the Lakers, and by long term, I mean the next season or two, something like that. But this needs to be more than just a half a season here with Luke Kennard with the Lakers to make this worth giving up that second round pick, given their situation that they're in right now. You can't continue to buy a half a season of players and have that value just evaporate. If we're talking about actually building up an asset base and building out the team, they need somebody that they buy that's going to stay and going to fit. I think the potential is certainly there with Luke Kennard to do that. That's my only hesitation is, does this become like a Reggie Bullock, a Mo Bamba, something where you give up a second, and in the moment it's real easy to say, well, who cares? It's just a second-round pick. Second-round picks do matter. And so this needs to be something that works long-term. I'm optimistic that it can and that it will. But for the Lakers, they need this to be more than just a half a season.
What's funny is I had dealt with the inverse where I feel like I got accused of being too positive on the move. So maybe I'm sort of pushing back against that. I think ultimately, like my thing was just that this group already is going to be navigating. Let's put Kennard to the side for a second and stick with, let's just even say the top nine. Let's theoretically put him at 10th and say the top nine guys, which is, we'll say Marcus is the fifth starter. Then your four top bench guys are Jake, Rui, Jackson, and Vando in some order. You're already navigating like four defensive liabilities to some degree of guys that can be targeted, guys that don't always rotate as the low man, guys that don't always box out, guys that don't get back in transition. And that might even be a little bit low. I'm sort of like generalizing here in terms of, I mean, that could be as few as like two or three players. It could be as high as like five or six players, right? So you have a little bit of a spectrum there in terms of fluctuating effort and attention and engagement. And of course, in the playoffs, I assume everybody to be more engaged, but that also applies to the opponent. And like, you know, the Lakers just don't have the defensive personnel that the top teams in the league have. So now you're adding in another player who has that challenge. And like, just looking at some of the metrics with him, he's right there defensively with Dalton and Luka and LeBron and Austin in a lot of defensive metrics. He actually rates out similarly to Vando in some offensive metrics, which I don't buy. And I think that was Atlanta misusing him. I think that will uptick and like he'll be a much more of a positive offensive player with LA. But like, I just think it's like now you're adding another guy into the rotation that is undersized and you have to hide. And the Lakers already had that issue. And in part, we're getting off of that issue, moving Gabe out of the rotation. And like, frankly, for as rough as Gabe was defensively, like Gabe is a much better defender than Luke Kennard. I do not think that is close, even with Gabe's slippage this season. So it's just like, you also probably added one of the worst perimeter defenders in the league in addition to one of the best perimeter shooters. So you did like address one need, but you also created this other problem of, can you play him and Austin together? Can you play him, Austin, and Rui together? Like, can you play him, Rui, and Luka together? I don't know, right? So there's just, I think it causes a different ripple effect with JJ, where now you have to factor in Luke Kennard's defense and how that plays into like the overall rotation. So to be clear, I get the logic. I think he's better than Gabe Vincent. I think he's going to help more than Gabe Vincent. I don't think it's like a no-brainer. This automatically improves LA by like X amount. I do think there's some actual factors they have to navigate.
Yep. Absolutely. I think they're going to have to make sure it's going to be incredibly important that they have that balance that we've talked about a lot on the court when Luke Kennard is out there. And in general, right, they need to make sure they're finding balance. But he is another, you know, one-way player. That said, if you're going to go get shooting, it's hard to do much worse, right? It's hard to do better sure. anyway than getting the very best three-point shooter in the NBA percentage-wise. So there's a lot to like about this. I think this very much can work. But as you said, you're going to have to be careful with how you structure things from here and move forward. Now, this does bleed into, obviously, this is a big summer now for the Lakers. They didn't make the move to get the pieces that they need in terms of athleticism, in terms of defense. That will now be on the to-do list for this coming summer. Jason, the Lakers have a lot. This is, you're going to have 57-ish somewhere. It's not an exact figure yet, but somewhere in that realm of cap space available to play with. And Rob Pelinka is going to have a lot of work to do. Kind of put all the eggs in the basket of this summertime. I'm a little nervous about that, but this could be a big summer to pivot and fully build out this team around Luka. Jason, what are you expecting to see out of Rob this summer?
Yeah, so I think there's some truth to the fact that you like cap space can be used in so many different ways that there's a great deal of flexibility. And I think it was completely defensible to do little to nothing at this deadline simply because this team obviously wasn't close enough. There were several check marks or checkpoints that they needed to hit in order to justify it. Like, I'm with Jovan that like I would have supported making a move for a player that would be around for multiple years as part of this deadline. But I also think it was defensible if that guy wasn't out there to move. So like, let's say for instance, like Miami really was not going to trade Wiggins unless it was for Giannis. Then like if Wiggins wasn't available and Herb Jones wasn't available and Claxton wasn't available, then, you know, that is what it is, what it is at this point. But going into this offseason, I view it very simply. Rob has passed the buck slash skipped over the hard part every single time over the course of the last several seasons. He gets tossed this massive life raft in the form of Luka Doncic. This summer, he's got to do it. And he's got to do it the hard way. And what I mean by that is trading for Giannis is easy. Like, if that happens to fall into their lap, and they accept your offer of Austin Reeves and three first-round picks during that brief window on draft day, if they accept that offer, that's easy. You've taken literally one of the top-tier superstars in the league and attached him to Luka. What's hard is if that doesn't work out. And what I mean is, at that point, you've got to make some tough decisions about what types of players you believe in, what types of players actually succeed around Luka, potentially giving up long-term flexibility. Like, if they go into this offseason and they don't use any of the first round picks and they basically run it back with Rui, like re-sign Rui at some team friendly deal and Ayton picks up his option, and then they go into next season selling you a bill of goods about how they're going to use their picks on the next great superstar that comes available, I think that would be completely unacceptable. So I think it's kind of similar to the offseason of that 2019-2020 where there's plan A, which is Giannis slash Kawhi, and then they've got to have a plan B. The difference is plan B in 2020 involved bringing back a lot of players they had team control over that fit right into that championship realm. You can't just bring everybody back next season. That team ain't good enough. So it's going to be a lot harder for him to piece this all together this offseason, and it's going to be – if Giannis slips through the cracks – it's going to be a real test of Rob Pelinka's basketball beliefs, his connections around the league, and his ability to assemble a championship competing roster.
Agree 100% with everything that you said there. And especially when you look at the free agent market for this summer, like two of the best players are already Lakers. That's LeBron and Austin. There's not a lot out there in free agency. Jovan, the can has been kicked. Are they able to do what they need to do this summer to, I agree with Jason. You have to come out of this summer with and make the run, whatever you can do right now. I'm not expecting them to get past second round top end right this year, but whatever happens this summer, you have to enter next season ready to roll. Are they going to be able to do that?
Well, I would say the last great offseason that the Lakers had was 2019. So we're going on six summers ago or so that, you know, we're sort of hoping they pull a rabbit out of the hat that they have not pulled in quite a while. I mean, that's the interesting thing is like they've been such a dormant offseason team for quite a while, right? Like last season or last summer, it's bargain bin hunting with DA and Smart and LaRavia. The summer before, it's doing nothing, which was also another summer. They had three tradable first round picks. Summer before that, it was just re-signing everybody off of the Western Conference Finals run, even though that group was clearly not good enough. Then the summer before that, they did the Pat Bev trade, but like didn't really do anything else. And then the 2021 summer was an abject disaster that has derailed the franchise's assets and created a rift between the Lakers and LeBron and Clutch. So it's been a few rough off seasons, we'll say, for the Lakers here. So they're putting a lot of their eggs in this basket, basically all of the eggs. I think if they walk out of, you know, if it's October 1st and we're here doing this show and the Lakers basically have the same group, but maybe like LeBron retired or left and they added like one new starter, I think that would be a disaster. I think like they're going big game hunting with Giannis. Okay. So that seems to be the top goal. If they don't land that, they need to do some combination of poaching a restricted free agent and or trading for other starters on other teams. If they don't do that and they just run it back to some degree with this group, I just think like we have to have a larger conversation at that point, because it's like how many times can they keep talking about these grand plans and these big visions that they have and then not executing them? And like you could say Luka, right? But that was not part of the plan during the 2024-25 season. That was something that was handed to them on a golden platter that they would be foolish to turn down. So like the plan was going to be they did the DFS trade and then they were going to do another small trade around the trade deadline and then just go into this summer with LeBron and AD. So I just, there's been a lot of like wish casting what they will do and them saying what they're going to do. And there's not been a lot of follow through. So I am skeptical that they're going to be able to pull this off just because we've heard this before. Now, the one difference is they do have the cap space to actually do stuff, and there is some flexibility there. But again, you look at the restricted, you look at the unrestricted free agent class, it's not good. Like, I don't even know if you just said like no one else is in competition and the Lakers can just pick anybody, I don't even know who I would pick. Like, it gets pretty grim there. And then, you know, like Mitchell Robinson might be like my top target among the unrestricted free agents. I think he's more of just a good backup. And then you get to the restricted free agents, but you're going to have to overpay to get a Walker Kessler, a Peyton Watson, a Tari Eason. You're probably going to have to overpay by like $5 to $7 million annually to actually get those teams to like turn down matching the offer sheet. And then around the league, like I don't see where this like clear starter is that's going to be available. Like maybe you put two or three picks on the table for a 3-D wing. You could poach somebody that way, but you still have other needs. So I just think they have a lot of needs. They do have the means to do it, but they need to pull off something they have not pulled off, I would argue, in like 6 years.
And remember, the Jazz just turned down reportedly two unprotected firsts yesterday for Walker Kessler. If there was a number they would break at to let Walker Kessler go, they would have taken that deal. So restricted free, especially with how much it ties up your cap space, I can't think of off the top of my head when was the last time a restricted free agent was actually taken from their incumbent team when that team didn't want to let that player go. That's going to be a real challenge. So they've got a lot to try to sort through this summer and still put together the kind of team that they need. So Rob Pelinka is going to be really put to the test this summer. They've got to find a way to capitalize on the assets that they've got. They can't let the whole summer just go by. They are the only contending team with cap space, but there's also a reason for that. If there were players out there to spend on, then there would be teams with cap space. It's not a, you know, the Lakers are so forward thinking that they've got cap space when no one else does, and now they're going to be able to just grab whoever they want. There's not anybody really out there to spend it on, and that's going to be the challenge. And they're going to have to do some work on the trade front using that draft capital. And frankly, we've said this a lot of times going into the summer, but just given their overall lack of assets, they're going to have to bat 1,000. They're going to have to hit on all the moves that they make if they're going to put together the kind of team that they ultimately need to have next year. So, look, it's a lot of pressure. We talked earlier about the pressure that's going to be on the Pacers when the draft lottery results are revealed. A much more drawn-out process, but there's going to be a lot of pressure as well on the Lakers to get things right this year and figure out a way to add the kind of pieces that they need alongside Luka. We would assume Austin. We'll see what happens with LeBron James. But essentially by only getting Luke Kennard at the trade deadline, that's now put a lot of pressure and a lot of expectations coming up in
July.
Can I
run one last idea about you guys before Absolutely. We do the ad read? So given that they don't get Giannis, let's evaluate that universe for a second. They'll have the two tradable firsts, and then there's the draft night. If I understand it correctly, it's the 2026 pick that they can trade on draft night.
Yeah.
Given their salary crunch moving forward, if they do, let's say, for instance, that Giannis gets traded, and in the ensuing chaos, the Lakers jump in and grab, you know, two or three, or let's just say two high-level starters, you know, one with each first-round pick, with just try and basically just absorb the salaries and essentially act as a third team in a Giannis deal or something like that. The payroll is going to fill up pretty quick, and you're going to want to maintain some flexibility on the margins. Should they be targeting, with that 2026 first, a rookie that is maybe a little bit older, that is more of like a ready-made role player type of dude? Should the Lakers be like opting to use that pick more for the discounted talent you can find in the draft as basically a do-everything athletic wing?
Well, they need a scouting department first.
I was waiting for that.
So what once they have a full scouting department, we can assess that. I mean, in theory, I get that. I think, of course, like, I mean, and that's even if we look at like the opposite here of if they get Giannis, they're going to need to nail a bunch of minimum signings and like a bunch of cheap talent. So to your point, like, I think either path, they're going to need like that young talent that, you know, this team, like, I mean, most of the guys, I think Jake is what, 23, if I'm not mistaken, around there. I mean, pretty much everyone else is like mid 20s, in that like mid to late 20s range on this roster right now. And like, you do need, I think, some early 20s, just like young blood out there running up and down, transition athletes, etc. I'm open to that. I just think based on how the last two drafts have gone, like they need to really look at the roster and the specific roster needs. And my preference would be a center or a two-way wing. I think they got to cut it out with the JHS Dalton offensive-minded guards who don't play defense. Like, go for your actual needs and stop trying to find some scorer off the bench.
Maybe Absolutely. They can find a rim-running center in that, and with that pick as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, potentially, you know, and that's if they keep the pick. I think they will shop it. And we've got, of course, tons of time to talk about what their strategy is going to be. But Jovan's on the money. They have to be laser focused on exactly what it is that this team needs to add. And you can't get distracted by anything else, whether that's in the draft, that's in free agency, that's on the trade market. You might say, oh, but this guy could be a good value. It doesn't matter. You have to get the pieces that you've been lacking for years now, and that's two-way players, can defend multiple positions, have some athleticism, and can at least shoot league average from behind the arc. You have to find pieces like that, and if that's in the draft, if that's in free agency, that's on the trade market. Got to be laser focused on those things. And as you guys said, the rim running big, all the other, of course, you know, pieces that you can add in, a point of attack, defensive guard, and you can get more specific with it. But you've got to find those pieces, and you can't get distracted by anything else, regardless of who falls or what kind of value is out there. All right, let's get into our questions and comments coming in from the chat. First, we're going to give a shout out to our sponsor. That is OG. If you're locked into everything happening with the purple and gold, breaking down matchups, late game decisions, and debating how far this squad can really go, OG is built for you. OG is a prediction markets experience where instead of traditional sports betting, you trade real world outcomes. On OG, you're trading simple yes or no outcome contracts. For example, you can trade outcomes like, will the Lakers win tonight? Price moves become in real time on market demand, which basically reflects how confident the market is in that outcome. OG prediction markets are derivatives products offered by crypto.com, available to eligible users. Some state restrictions apply, terms and conditions apply. And right now, OG is running the big game bonus. If you sign up and start trading predictions during the campaign window, you can earn bonuses based on your total trading activity with a chance to earn up to $500 in bonuses. OG isn't just sports either. You could trade markets across politics, economics, and more. Check leaderboards and jump into live chats with other users. If you want to check it out, head over to OG.com or scan the QR code that's on your screen right now. Terms and conditions apply. And we do appreciate OG for sponsoring this show. All right, guys, let's get into some of our chat questions and comments that we've had coming in over the course of the show. We'll turn it over to our chat here and see what they want to know. Kevin said, look at the LA current team assets and other teams like OKC, San Antonio, and their assets to improve their team. I think the Luka era has died before it even started. Is that where we're at? Jason, is the Luka era is in trouble because OKC and San Antonio have more assets and they look pretty good?
I'm going to go quick here because I know we only have 9 minutes and I'm sure we want to get to a lot of questions. I'll keep this really simple. The Lakers will be operating with a disadvantage in terms of available assets. That is just a fact. So you need to have somebody super savvy in control who excels at operating on the margins. And I'm just not sure Rob Pelinka is that guy. So it's like a bad combination of like difficulty level is high and competency level is low. And that just is a recipe for disaster.
I will just quickly say that this is, I think, an under discussed part of the Lakers' plan is like it will be another summer of revamping and reshaping this roster with this group needing a certain level. Like there will be some carryover, I guess, between Luka and Austin and whoever else remains. But you look at some of these other teams and OKC has been building this for multiple years. Denver's been building this for multiple years. Even San Antonio has now had a couple years together with this group. Minnesota, Houston had the core there and then added KD. Those groups have a continuity advantage over the Lakers that you just can't replicate outside of time. So they're certainly operating at a disadvantage here with the current plan.
Yeah, they are. They're needing to put things together on the fly. And those teams are also not going to get worse. Those teams will continue to get better and improve. So that part of that is just life in the Western Conference. But that's why you're going to have to get everything right this summer in order to get yourself into that mix. This one said, Austin Reeves, ew, no, let's trade for a power forward that has diminishing returns in Giannis. That's already, as it is, a pipe dream. F team building. Let's just play my GM in 2K. Let's go, Rob. I don't think it's Austin Reeves or Giannis. I think what the Lakers are hoping for, and frankly, I don't think they should wait too long on Giannis, but I think they're hoping for Luka, Austin, and Giannis together.
There's no chance they're going to win an offer, a bidding war, without putting Austin in there.
What,
like they just turned down four unprotected firsts from the Warriors.
Oh, yeah, I agree. No, I don't think they get in on it, but they don't have Austin to trade.
I know, but they could theoretically do like a sign-in trade as part of that deal.
If he'll go to the Bucks.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay, so let's say let's just examine it within that context then. Yeah. So Austin can't be included unless it's only two first round picks and Austin's been resigned and it's January 15th or whatever. That's still like I'm not 100% sure I would want to do the Giannis. I think it's defensible because Giannis and Luka, you just figure out the rest. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm not 100% sure that I would want to go away from the formula that has been proven, which is Luka plus secondary shot creating guard plus elite rim protector plus 3-and-D wings. That has been the formula that has succeeded with that group forever. I'm not 100% sure Luka, Giannis, and a bunch of minimums is any better than that.
Guys, legends don't chase. They attract.
Was that not the corniest shit you've ever seen?
That is so ridiculous.
That entire, everything from the them making fun of Shams, I'm like, every reporter of repute was all over that story. That was not a Shams manufactured story. That was like, you were shopping him. Guess what? And it's like, to Giannis, if you actually were like gonna stay there forever and be the legend, you could have literally done a press conference 2 weeks ago when Shams did his first report and been like, I'm gonna be a Buck until I retire. I love this city, never going anywhere. Hang up the phones, GMs. I'm staying here. You chose not to do that. Them all trying to play this all like, actually, this was all fabricated and I'm staying here. And but it's just such BS. No one's buying it. No one's buying your crap. That was lame as hell. Just pick a lane. Either go into the mercenary phase of your career or go to the second team of your career or stay put and say you're never leaving. Pick a lane. This oscillating thing is not working for anybody.
No. The passive aggressive stuff and acting as though it all came from out of thin air and this is just the media versus the Bucks things. It's bullshit. That's what it is.
Who are you
it's
fooling? Bullshit. Is anybody so
over
buying that
I'm
shit?
So over this whole storyline. I just want it to be either stay put or get traded. And, just and like this, stop with this.
This is why if you're the Lakers this summer, you can't screw around with Giannis too long because there's a decent chance he's going to spend most of the summer saying, maybe I want to go, maybe I don't. Maybe my wife won't love me tomorrow, whatever other analogy he wants to use, right? That's what we're going to hear all summer long.
Yeah, you can't sunny sit side up eggs.
For Giannis to figure life out.
I want eggs this morning.
Ryan said, any indication on Luka's severity? No, man, we're on pins and needles. We're on pins and needles waiting for word.
It
but
looked
nothing,
mild to me.
So the only thing I can quickly add was like, I saw him walk out. I was one of a couple media members who saw him walk out of the Lakers locker room area, and he was walking gingerly. I would say there was like a slight limp there, but he was walking on his own accord. He didn't need any assistance. So it does seem mild to me, but again, with the way the Lakers have handled injuries, I would not be surprised if he misses at least a couple games, if not through the All-Star break.
Yeah. All right. Well, good to hear, though, that he wasn't, you know, needing assistance or anything there. We need two open roster spots, not going to lie. How are you getting that? Are you waving Maxi after last night's game? Man, that'd be cold. One for a big and the other for Haywood or Matisse. We're talking about the buyout market here. You guys expect the Lakers to be aggressive on the buyout market? They do have an open roster spot. They do have enough room below that first apron to add somebody.
I would assume so. Did Matisse Thybulle end up getting bought out?
Not, I think there's an assumption that he will because the Blazers have to clear spots for their two-way guys.
He'd be a nice little pickup.
He's injured, though.
He has only played four games this season.
Okay, so he's just like Haywood.
Yeah, Haywood hasn't played at all this season.
But Haywood is at least reportedly
he's supposed to be back. Yeah,
he's supposed to be back. If you had to, if you got to pick between the two, who'd you take?
Well, whoever's healthiest.
Yeah,
I think I'd lean Haywood, but I don't know. That like Haywood's a better shooter. Matisse is a better defender. So now we're kind of like in that. They both have some injury concerns. That's tough.
Any interest in Cam Thomas?
No.
Jesus. He's
just an unserious player that I think is going to be looking for an opportunity to get his next contract, and I don't.
He's going to be
that with the Lakers.
He's a talented player.
Very talented.
He's an interesting buyout target for somebody that needs a six-man scorer off the bench, but that's not the biggest need for these Lakers.
Yeah. Sorry guys, I've been loopy today if you can't tell.
Dude, I've had dyslexia all week. You have any idea how many times I've mixed up a name of a player or a team this week? It's been so bad.
Well, dude, the Luke and Luke Kennard now is throwing me off where people will be asking questions and I'll say Luca instead of Luke or Luke instead of Luca. I'm typing it out and it's like, it's going to be tough.
We're all running on fumes. The other day, I called Jalen Brunson Jameer Nelson. I went, oh my God. Jesus. Like I was, running on fumes. All right, we'll get to one more here. Would you offer Braun $20 million next year? No problem. Or do you build without him in mind and only offer what money is left? Notion of Cleveland getting him with an MLE because LA is forcing him out irks me. Bye-bye. What do you do with LeBron this summer? Do you try to keep him around? Do you just offer him whatever's left over after you do all your spending? How do you handle that situation?
I think you try to appeal to LeBron with a good roster. Like I think if the Lakers don't dramatically improve, LeBron will likely sign elsewhere anyway or retire. So like really, I would just go about building the best roster possible, and then whatever's left, pitch it to LeBron as an opportunity to win. And if you can get LeBron to get on board with that discount, then so be it. But I would expect LeBron, if the Lakers don't go all in this summer, I'd expect LeBron to look elsewhere or retire.
So we just got the Luka update here. Dave said, there is some initial optimism that Luka Doncic is not dealing with a major issue with his left hamstring. However, he is doubtful to play Saturday against the Golden State Warriors, sources tell ESPN.
Makes sense.
Not a surprise, but.
Yeah. And Steph's not playing in that game either. LeBron and Austin should be able to get it done.
Hope so. All right. I know we got to run. Jovan, you keeping LeBron around?
It depends on the options. In theory, I would like to, and I think there are versions of the Lakers build that he fits into. But I do like even last night, I don't know if you guys saw this, but like they got killed in the Luka LeBron minutes. There was the different net rating of the lineups that played last night, and it just continues to not like there's been progress with those two together, but it does feel like the Lakers are better when one is on the floor and one is off, and just staggering those two as much as possible. So I just ultimately wonder if at this stage of both of their careers, there's just sort of a limitation to that partnership, and it might be better to go in a different direction. But if the Lakers are running it back, I think if you're running it back just without LeBron, you're objectively a worse team. So yes, if they are running it back and that's the best option, then I think LeBron has to be strongly considered.
Yeah, there's not a lot of replacements out there in free agency, so we'll see what they can get done. But everybody, thank you very much for joining our show today. Super chats that we didn't get to, I will save them. Make sure we get to those. We appreciate all of you. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you subscribe to the channel. Turn on those notifications as well. Guys, thanks again. And this was great. Have a fantastic weekend.
Yes, sir. For those who want to watch more of my loopy content, I will be going live in 20 minutes on my channel. So tune in for who knows what's going to happen.
That's right.
Let's get those likes up.
You never know.
It's good to see you, boys. I'm looking forward to next week. I think we're going to have a couple of funky things with the schedule over the next couple of weeks because we've got a couple. I have some guests coming to Denver, and Trevor's traveling a little bit. So we have a couple of duo shows coming up on the horizon. Jovan and I, for when Trevor's on his trip, we're going to do a series of player grades for a couple episodes that should be fun. So that'll be good. Next week, everybody, our episode is at 11 a.m. Pacific on Tuesday. So that'll be the first episode next week.
That's right. All right, everybody, exciting stuff coming up. We appreciate all of you. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.